which is the most important of all services. The Queens of Dwarka headed...
I'm sorry, I would like to read the purports also.
Oh, okay. Okay. Purport. As we have discussed many times, the personality of Godhead Vishnu resides within each and every universe in two capacities, namely as the Garbhodakshayi Vishnu and the Kshirodakshayi Vishnu. The Kshirodakshayi Vishnu has his own planet on the northern top of the universe, and there is a great ocean of milk where the Lord resides on the bed of the Ananta incarnation of Baladev. Thus, Maharaj Yudhisthira has compared the Yadu dynasty to the ocean of milk and Sri Balaram to the Ananta where Lord Krishna resides. He has compared the citizens of Dwarka to the liberated inhabitants of the Vaikuntha Lokas. Beyond the material sky, further than we can see with our eyes, and beyond the sevenfold coverings of the universe, there is the causal ocean in which all the universes are floating like footballs. And beyond the causal ocean, there is an unlimited span of spiritual sky generally known as the effulgence of Brahman. Within this effulgence, there are innumerable spiritual planets, and they are known as the Vaikuntha planets. Each and every Vaikuntha planet is many, many times bigger than the biggest universe within the material world. And in each of them, there are innumerable inhabitants who look exactly like Lord Vishnu. These inhabitants are known as the Maha Purushikas, or persons directly engaged in the service of the Lord. They are happy in those planets and are without any kind of misery, and they live perpetually in full youthfulness, enjoying life in full bliss and knowledge, without fear of birth, death, old age, or disease, and without the influence of Kala, eternal time. Maharaj Yudhisthira has compared the inhabitants of Dwarka to the Maha Purushikas of Vaikuntha Loka because they are so happy with the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are many references to the Vaikuntha Lokas, and they are mentioned there as Madham, or the Kingdom of the Lord.
Next translation, please.
Simply by administering comforts at the lotus feet of the Lord, which is the most important of all services, the queens at Dwarka, headed by Satyabhama, induce the Lord to conquer the demigods. Thus the queens enjoy things which are prerogatives of the wives of the controller of thunderbolts.
Purport, please.
Satyabhama, one of the principal queens of Lord Shri Krishna at Dwarka. After killing Narasura, Lord Krishna visited the palace of Narasura accompanied by Satyabhama.
What was the other name of Narasura? Balmasura. And what was the unique thing about that visit? Yes, so Krishna took his wife to marry 16,000 new wives. And Satyabhama was very tolerant.
He went to Indraloka also with Satyabhama, and she was received by Sachi Devi, who introduced her to the mother of demigods, Aditi. Aditi was very much pleased with Satyabhama, and she blessed her with the benediction of permanent youth as long as Lord Krishna remained on the earth. Aditi also took her with her to show her the special prerogatives of the demigods in the heavenly planet. When Satyabhama saw the Parijata flower, she desired to have it in her palace at Dwarka. After that, she came back to Dwarka along with her husband and expressed her willingness to have this Parijata flower at her palace. Satyabhama's palace was specially bedecked with valuable jewels, and even in the hottest season of summer, the inside of the palace remained cool, as if air-conditioned. She decorated her palace with various flags, heralding the news of her great husband present there. Once along with her husband, she met Draupadi, and she was anxious to be instructed by Draupadi in the ways and means of pleasing her husband. Draupadi was expert in this affair because she kept 5 husbands, the Pandavas, and all were very much pleased with her. On receipt of Draupadi's instruction, she was very much pleased and offered her good wishes and returned to Dwarka. She was the daughter of Satrajit. After the departure of Lord Krishna, when Arjuna visited Dwarka, all the queens, including Satyabhama and Rukmani, lamented for the Lord with great feeling. At the last stage of her life, she left for the forest to undergo severe penance.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Satyabhama instigated her husband to get the Parijata flower from the heavenly planets, and the Lord got it even by force from the demigods, as a common husband secures things to please his wife. As already explained, the Lord had very little to do with so many wives to carry out their orders like an ordinary man. But because the queens accepted the high quality of devotional service, namely administering the Lord all comforts, the Lord played the part of a faithful and complete husband. No earthly creature can expect to have things from the heavenly kingdom, especially the Parijata flowers, which are simply to be used by the demigods. But due to their becoming the Lord's faithful wives, all of them enjoyed the special prerogatives of the great wives of the denizens of heaven. In other words, since the Lord is the proprietor of everything within his creation, it is not very astonishing for the queens of Dwaraka to have any rare thing from any part of the universe.
Text 38. The great heroes of the Yadu dynasty, being protected by the arms of Lord Sri Krishna, always remain fearless in every respect, and therefore their feet trample over the Sudharma assembly house, which the best demigods deserved, but which was taken away from them.
Those who are directly servitors of the Lord are protected by the Lord from all fearfulness, and they also enjoy the best of things, even if they are forcibly accumulated. The Lord is equal in behavior to all living beings, but he is partial to his pure devotees, being very affectionate toward them. The city of Dwarka was flourishing, being enriched with the best things in the material world. The state assembly house is constructed according to the dignity of the particular state. In the heavenly planets, the state assembly house, called Sudharma, was deserving of the dignity of the best of the demigods. Such an assembly house is never meant for any state on the globe, because the human being on the earth is unable to construct it, however far a particular state may be materially advanced. But during the time of Lord Krishna's presence on the earth, the members of the Yadu family forcibly brought the celestial assembly house to earth and placed it at Dwarka. They were able to use such force because they were certain of the indulgence and protection of the Supreme Lord Krishna. In other words, the Lord is provided with the best things in the universe by his pure devotees. Lord Krishna was provided with all kinds of comforts and facilities available within the universe by the members of the Yadu dynasty, and in return, such servitors of the Lord were protected and fearless.
A forgetful, conditioned soul is fearful, but a liberated soul is never fearful. Just as a small child, completely dependent on the mercy of his father, is never fearful of anyone. Fearfulness is a sort of illusion for the living being when he is in slumber and forgetting his eternal relation with the Lord. Since the living being is never to die by his constitution, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.20, then what is the cause of fearfulness? A person may be fearful of a tiger in a dream, but another man who is awake by his side sees no tiger there. The tiger is a myth for both of them, namely the person dreaming and the person awake, because actually there is no tiger. But the man forgetful of his awakened life is fearful, whereas the man who has not forgotten his position is not at all fearful. Thus the members of the Yadu dynasty were fully awake in their service to the Lord, and therefore there was no tiger for them to be afraid of at any time. Even if there were a real tiger, the Lord was there to protect them.
Next, please.
My brother Arjuna, please tell me whether your health is all right. You appear to have lost your bodily luster. Is this due to others disrespecting and neglecting you because of your long stay in Dwaraka?
Should I read the purport? Yes. Go ahead and pass the mic.
Purport. From all angles of vision, the Maharaj inquired from Arjuna about the welfare of Dwarka. But he concluded at last that as long as Lord Sri Krishna himself was there, nothing inauspicious could happen. But at the same time, Arjuna appeared to be bereft of his bodily luster, and thus the king inquired of his personal welfare and asked so many vital questions.
Text 40. Has someone addressed you with unfriendly words or threaten you? Could you not give charity to one who asked? Or could you not keep your promise to someone?
A kshatriya or a rich man is sometimes visited by persons who are in need of money. When they are asked for a donation, it is the duty of the possessor of wealth to give in charity in consideration of the person, place and time. If a Kshatriya or a rich man fails to comply with this obligation, he must be very sorry for this discrepancy. Similarly, one should not fail to keep his promise to give in charity. These discrepancies are sometimes causes of despondency, and thus failing, a person becomes subjected to criticism, which might also be a cause of Arjuna's plight.
Text 41. You are always the protector of the deserving living beings, such as brahmanas, children, cows, women, and the diseased. Could you not give them protection when they approached you for shelter?
The brahmanas, who are always engaged in researching knowledge for the society's welfare work, both materially and spiritually, deserve the protection of the king in all respects. Similarly, the children of the state, the cow, the diseased person, the woman, and the old man specifically require the protection of the state or Kshatriya king. If living beings do not get protection by the Kshatriya, or the royal order, or by the state, it is certainly shameful for the Kshatriya or the state. If such things had actually happened to Arjuna, Maharaj Yudhisthira was anxious to know about these discrepancies.
Have you contacted a woman of impeachable character, or have you not properly treated the deserving woman? Or have you been defeated on the way by someone who is inferior or equal to you?
It appears from this verse that during the time of the Pandavas, free contact between man and woman was allowed in certain conditions only. The higher caste men, namely the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas, could accept a woman of the Vaishyas or Shudra community, but a man from the lower caste could not contact a woman of a higher caste. Even a Kshatriya could not contact a woman of the Brahmana caste. The wife of a Brahmana is considered one of the 11 mothers, namely one's own mother, the wife of the spiritual master or teacher, the wife of a Brahmana, the wife of a king, the cow, the nurse and the earth. Such contact between man and woman was known as Uttama and Adhama. Contact between a Brahmana with a Kshatriya woman is Uttama, but the contact between Kshatriya with a Brahmana woman is Adhama, or therefore condemned. A woman approaching a man for contact should never be refused, but at the same time, the discretion as above mentioned may be considered.
Bhima was approached by Hidimbi from a community lower than the Sudras. Yayati refused to marry the daughter of Sukracharya because Sukracharya is being a Brahmana. Vyasadeva, a Brahmana, was called to beget Pandu and Dhritarashtra. Satyavati belonged to a family of fishermen, but Parasara, a great Brahmana, begot in her Vyasadeva. So there are many examples of contacts with women, but in all cases the contacts are not abominable, nor were the results of such contacts bad. Contact between man and woman is natural, but that also must be carried out under regulative principles, so that social consecration may not be disturbed or unwanted worthless population be increased for the unrest of the world.
It is abominable.
It is abominable for a Kshatriya to be defeated by one who is inferior in strength or equal in strength. If one is defeated at all, he should be defeated by someone's superior power. Arjuna was defeated by Bhishma Dev, and Lord Krishna saved him from the danger. This is not an insult for Arjuna, because Bhishma Dev was far superior to Arjuna in all ways, namely age, respect, and strength. But Karna was equal to Arjuna, and therefore Arjuna was in crisis when fighting with Karna. It was felt by Arjuna, therefore, that Karna was killed even by crooked means. Such are the engagements of the Kshatriyas. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired from his brother whether anything undesirable happened on the way home from Dwarka.
Have you not taken care of old men and boys who deserve to dine with you? Have you left them and taken your meals alone? Have you committed some unpardonable mistake which is considered to be abominable? It is the duty of a householder to feed, first of all, the children, the old members of the family, the Brahmins, and the invalids. Besides that, an idle householder is required to call for any unknown hungry man to come and dine before he himself goes to take his meals. He is required to call for such a hungry man thrice on the road. The neglect of this prescribed duty of a householder, especially in the matter of the old men and children, is unpardonable.
And this is the regulation, that the householder, before eating the meal, is supposed to go out in his front door and cry as loudly as possible, "Anyone hungry, let them please come and eat." He has to do that 3 times before eating and feed anyone who comes, and then he only can take his meal. Five acres, yes. Okay, so text 44.
Or is it that you are feeling empty for all time because you might have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? Oh, my brother Arjuna, I can think of no other reason for your becoming so dejected.
Report. All the inquisitiveness of Maharaj Yudhishthira about the world situation was already conjectured by Maharaj Yudhishthira on the basis of Lord Krishna's disappearance from the vision of the world. And this was now disclosed by him because of the acute dejection of Arjuna, which could not have been possible otherwise. So even though he was doubtful about it, he was obliged to inquire frankly from Arjuna on the basis of Sri Narada's indication. Okay. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to start by asking everyone to just please look at the ceiling and do not divert your eyes from it for any reason until I say so, all right? Okay, everybody looking? Now, all together, let's say the title of this chapter. Okay, just checking. Good. Now, this section we just read has two subtle but distinct divisions. How would you characterize them? These 10 verses we just read. Some of them deal with one subject and some with another. Can anyone see that differentiation? Vaishnav? Do your best, please.
So many of these verses talk about the good order about the society, how things should be done, what is beneficial, what is not beneficial, how one should be treated. The other part treats with the Yudhishthira really trying to inquire about Lord Krishna and coming the mood of lamentation, maybe Lord Krishna left. Two different.
Which is the first one?
I think the talking about what is good, how things should be executed.
Okay. Yes, I think that's a good distinction. Can we refine that a little bit, Chaitanya?
The beginning part was talking about the queens and the opulences they had.
Yes, first he's talking about the opulences of Dwarka, which is the way society ought to be. And he speaks about the various relatives of the Lord and the wives, specifically Satyabhama. And says certainly whoever is living there in Dwarka is safe and protected and happy because Krishna is there. So he's speaking about first, yes, the glories of Dwarka and Krishna's abode. And then he switches gears and talks about what in the remaining verses? About what is wrong with you, Arjuna? So then he begins listing a series of things he imagines might have caused Arjuna's obviously troubled situation. His appearance. Arjuna is not known to be very depressed, quiet, reserved. He's a very powerful and confident person. So here is Arjuna just completely withdrawn, and Yudhisthira is wondering. So these two expressions by Yudhisthira indicate what? If you had to say this in a word, what is a contemporary... What's that?
Concern.
Concern? Yeah, even a little more. If you're concerned about something and you really hope it isn't true, what do you express? Anxiety or...
Denial,
yes. Yes. What was that country western song? My name is Cleopatra, I'm the queen of denial. Little culture there. So yeah, he is suspecting that Krishna has left. Why? As mentioned in the last purport. No, before that. Narada Muni, yes. Do you remember at the end of chapter 13, Narada tells him by his mystic vision what's happening with Dhritarashtra and Vidura and Gandhari, and then he gives Yudhisthira this instruction. You just stay here so there's nothing to worry about with these elders. You don't have to go and pursue them. They're all taken care of. Now, you just stay here and rule the kingdom until Lord Krishna disappears. This is... Narada sort of puts this to him. What is the actual chronology here? What has Lord Krishna had already disappeared, and why didn't Yudhisthira know this? Because Vidura didn't tell him. He thought, Yudhisthira is happy. Why should I disturb him by telling him that Krishna has gone? And he was there anyway just to get Dhritarashtra out of his ridiculous situation and help him. So he didn't disclose this news to the Yudhisthira. He said, let him enjoy a few more days. So this is, and Narada gave him a hint also. Narada also did not disclose this. So Yudhisthira is already aware that this could be happening. But when he sees Arjuna, he's talking very happily about how things must be so nice in Dwarka. See? Oh, because Krishna's there. And Krishna certainly is protecting everyone, and everyone there is certainly very happy. Right? 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 Those are the first verses. And then he's not getting the response he wants from Arjuna. So he says, Arjuna, is something wrong with you? And then he says, have you failed in your duties as a Kshatriya somehow to fulfill the needs of dependents? And he lists one, is your health all right? He's asking one thing after the next and not getting any response. And finally, in the last verse, he says, oh, or is it that you are depressed for all time because Lord Krishna has left his planet? Has that time finally come? So it's the last thing he wants to say to Arjuna. He's exhausting every other possibility. You can imagine if somebody's come to you and said, oh, there's some terrible news. And they can't speak, right? So then you start saying, well, did this happen? Did this happen? Did this happen? And you'd save the absolute worst thing for last, hoping that some lesser catastrophe has taken place. So this is the speech of Yudhisthira at the very end of this chapter. It's very poignant. And Bhagavatam is full of these very subtle and beautifully expressed, real human interactions and emotions. It is not something that is just done that is so removed from our lives. It's much closer than we might imagine. And even these great pure devotees, Yudhisthira and Arjuna, are experiencing emotions with which we can completely relate. So Yudhisthira has expressed this kind of denial, hoping it's something else. In psychology, they say that the grieving process has several stages. The first one is denial and the refusal to accept or the hope that there must be some mistake. when our friends passed away in January, I got this message from Chaturatma. They didn't know which Nittai it was. And he thought it was another Nittai who was associated with our center. So I was sending emails around trying to find out. And so some people got alarmed. Oh, this one is dead. They thought it was another Nittai. We all got alarmed. But when there is bad news, the first reaction is, no, that can't be true. And what we're really saying is that I cannot fathom my life if this is true. It becomes incongruous. It's a logistical impossibility or a logical impossibility that I could live without this person being present. It's like if you went out at night and looked up at the sky and half the stars were gone, or the moon was full the night before, all of a sudden it's disappeared. It would just be disorienting. So the first stage of grief is this denial, this impossibility, this sense of it cannot possibly be true. But when the mind becomes convinced it is actually reality, then what? Anyone know the next stage? Pardon me?
Bargaining,
yes. I think that comes a little bit later. Anger is next, yeah. Then one experiences something like if there has been someone with some fault in the death of a loved one, there is an inevitable sense of anger at the person who held some fault. Some of us who were here when Stacy died, you might remember seeing this in some of the family members. So anger is a natural stage of grieving. Then bargaining. Bargaining means, God, if you just reverse this, I promise I'll be good. Somehow you can undo this. That can be there, given certain circumstances. And grief doesn't just mean in death also. It can mean in disease and some other setback. Divorce. So after bargaining, there is depression and acceptance. I think that's something like the five stages. So it's not meant to be a psychology class, but still, just to show that in the course of accepting terrible news, there are stages of realization. So in this last realization, to the point where one can say, okay, now I accept this as true. It's terrible. I wish it hadn't happened, but I'm going to have to carry on, even though my life is now emptier in so many ways without this situation that I used to have. So in the last stages of his speech, Yudhisthira is addressing Arjuna as if he has somehow failed in his duty as a Kshatriya. That might be a cause of his appearing so sad. So he starts going through all of the things he can imagine. Well, when you were coming here, Did you fail to protect somebody? Where is Arjuna coming from?
Dwarka.
Right. And what was he there for? Does anyone remember? Yes. Right. And what? Clayton?
To see the
Yes. Exactly. Yes. To see how Krishna is doing and remember, there is no email, there's no internet, so this is the means of communication. He had to make the long journey, and then he would come back and give the report. Can you imagine? This is such a gentler pace of life. Was it Chaturatma was talking about the commercial, the latest technology on the iPhone? Did you hear it's going to rain? Oh, that's so 3 seconds ago. So 3 seconds ago, because I have the new technology. So people think this is advancement to get bad news in a hurry and get it more quickly. One of my devotee friends was introducing a Sunday feast lecture once, and he said, "So, ladies and gentlemen, I have good news and bad news. Which would you like first?" And everyone says, "The bad news." He says, "Okay, then watch CNN. The good news is that we..." and indeed, this is a fact. And if we look at the news, is there ever any good news? Very rarely, isn't it? It's almost always the latest disaster. For television news, they say, if it bleeds, it leads. In other words, the lead story should involve some kind of physical injury that is going to get people's attention so they'll stay tuned. So yes, it is just bad news. So we have increased the speed of news, but it's all bad news. So what is the use? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that a newspaper could be printed every day about Krishna consciousness. And somebody questioned him, "How could you just print a newspaper basically about philosophy?" And he said, "In one ordinary city like Calcutta, there are so many daily newspapers just reporting on the instances and the occurrences in this one insignificant city. So just imagine the limitless spiritual sky, how much is going on there?" It just takes the vision and the ability to express. So Arjuna's bringing this news. The news is obviously very bad. And Yudhisthira is just beginning to consider what it might be. So the second part of his speech, he talks about the duties of a kshatriya. Arjuna, as a kshatriya, is expected to give shelter. In the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it's a beautifully, beautifully structured chapter, the longest one in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna begins the chapter with the subject of the three modes of nature and their effects on various elements of human life. Anyone remember some of them from that chapter? What is the title of the chapter? Perfection of Renunciation. So what does he start off talking about? Renunciation in the three modes, right? And then any others you remember from that? Charity, I believe, is the previous chapter. Chapter 17. Work, yes. Yeah, and that comes later. Before that, anything else you can remember? I believe happiness is discussed there in the modes. Austerity.
Understanding.
Yep. And determination. So these are rather abstract facets of life according to the modes. Then he concludes by talking about the four varnas. After describing not only in chapter 18 but in 17 and 14 these various divisions of qualities and how they affect life, then he concludes by talking about the qualities of these four varnas. So very logical structure. And then he concludes, then after that he says, regardless of what kind of work you do, you can become perfect by doing it for the Supreme. Then he concludes the Bhagavad Gita with this beautiful fortissimo of philosophy, all these big verses, famous verses about bhakti. So what are the qualities of a kshatriya? Anyone remember Krishna's description there in the 18th chapter?
Courage.
Very good.
Generosity.
Excellent. I'll give you the Sanskrit, see if you can tell. Teja. Strength. Yes, strength. Power. Dhriti. Determination. Determination. Dakshyam. Yes, expertise or resourcefulness, he says. Yeah. Remember, daksha in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam. Daksha means expert. So, dakshyam. Kshatriyas are supposed to be expert, resourceful. Yudhe chapalayayanam. That means, what is yudhe?
War,
right. So yudhe chapalayanam means he does not retreat in battle. Does not run away from a fight. Dhanam, generosity, you mentioned. Ishwara Bhava. Bhava. Ishwara Bhava. Leadership. Yeah. Yes, so these are the duties. These are the means by which a Kshatriya works. So again, that is heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity, and leadership. So if there is some kind of a calamity, which inevitably happens in society, then how does the Brahmin respond? This is due to the fact that we are in this material world and it's not our home. We are getting these miseries because of our failing to remember Krishna. Gives a philosophical context to everything, which is very important. Not always the most practical, but very important. See? And the how does the Vaishya respond to a calamity? Pardon me? Yes, we're talking about not a transcendental response, but in terms of their position in the modes of nature.
If they're doing that, then Lord, they're not satisfied.
Yep, might think that way. Yes, I haven't satisfied the demigods with my charity. I had something else in mind. You think, how can I do what? How can I make a buck? Yes, there's okay, there's some calamity. It's raining. Where can I buy umbrellas? So how does the Shudra respond to a calamity? They might complain, yes. Or they might ask, yeah, what are we going to do? Please tell me what to do. I don't know what to do. Tell me. Guide me. See, so none of them respond for the welfare of all, except for the Kshatriya. For the immediate, I should say the immediate welfare of all. Certainly the Brahmin's got the welfare of everyone in mind. But the Kshatriya's duty is to deal with the immediate situation. Therefore they have to be possessed of these qualities. They have to have the power, they have to have the money, they have to have resources, they have to know how to adapt to the situation in order to protect the people. There's a great responsibility for the Kshatriya to protect everyone. Everyone is looking, okay, now what do we do? And the Kshatriya is the person who says, okay, this is what we're going to do. So the Kshatriya's duty is to make decisions. And life is nothing but a series of decisions if you look at it. So in baseball, if a batter makes the right decision 1 out of 3 times, then they are considered a very good player, right? Anyone know baseball? So they're swinging the bat. If they hit the ball, if they have a percentage of 300 or better, they're considered very good hitters. It's a very difficult thing to do. So my point is that we have to make decisions, and Kshatriya's first duty is to make decisions because a decision has to be made. So, right or wrong, the Kshatriya has to do something. You know the expression, if somebody's indecisive, then people will say, lead, follow, or get out of the way. Right? So the one thing a Kshatriya cannot afford to do is be indecisive. They have to lead, they have to give up their leadership, or they have to just dither on the sidelines so somebody else can come in and make a decision. So decisions have to be made. And it takes courage to make decisions. Why? You might be wrong, right? you might be wrong. And so out of fear of being wrong, people will be reluctant to make a decision. This is a sign more of a Brahmin than a Kshatriya, right? So let's consider, should we do this or that? The Kshatriya is going to come in and say, we're going to do this because we have to do something. Because if we don't do something, then we're ruined. And then if the decision is wrong, the Kshatriya also is resourceful. Okay, we tried this, this didn't work, now we're going to go this way. The Kshatriya is not afraid to be wrong. See? So that power, that resourcefulness, and the willingness to lead, Ishwara Bhav, these are qualities inherent in a Kshatriya. And as a result, everyone else in society who lacks these qualities, what do they do for the Kshatriya? What? Well, they take from the Kshatriya. What do they give? In taxes. Yes. The Vaishyas, specifically, you have to give 25% in the Varnashram system. It's just off the top. Flat tax. Everyone gives 25%. So the Kshatriya's duty is to accumulate wealth. And that gives everyone a sense of security. In our society, when government accumulates wealth, it creates a great sense of insecurity that is going to be corrupt. People will misuse it. Like the last three governors of the state of Illinois, elected governors, are all in prison now for corruption. Yes. Yes, yes. That's the quality of the Brahmins. The Brahmins do not keep. Yes, they redistribute.
As devotees, can we train ourselves or be trained to operate in different varnas and our qualities?
Yes, that is the quality of a Vaishnava. Vaishnava can act in any varna according to the situation. So that's what we all have to know. How to lead when the situation demands it. So the first thing is to make a decision. If we could, please. Sometimes when you hear classes like this about the government,
it just seems like it's going to be a while before devotees take over the American government. Like to establish like a varna system and stuff like that. So I was also thinking about a more when you were talking about, I was thinking more about in ISKCON. I've seen temples that I ask someone who's the temple president, and they'll say, "No one really. We have a board right now. Mm-hmm. No one really wants to make decisions. Those temples are usually a mess. Like in my experience, so." It seems like there is, not just in the government, there's a lack of, the U.S. government, there's a lack of, like, Kshatriyas, people willing to stand up and, you know, take a lead. But also in ISKCON, we could say that there is a need for more Kshatriyas. That's my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There's a need for more courage, power, determination, resourcefulness. Individual. Yes, willingness to make a mistake. There is a story from IBM. Some junior executive made a $10 million mistake, and he wrote his resignation letter, took it into his boss, gave it to his boss. The boss looks, "You can't quit. We just spent $10 million educating you."
Wow, that's great.
What is his boss? They say that good judgment is the result of experience, and experience is the result of bad judgment. So, and leadership, yes, your point's well taken. We're not talking about theoretical, ideas running the government. We're talking about like running a family, running a temple, running a business, running yourself. We have to make decisions. We have to be willing to live with the consequences of those decisions. And in many cases, there's no right or wrong. Absolutely. It's just a matter of which consequences we want to live with. So being willing to make a decision in consultation with others. The Kshatriyas do not act independently of the Brahmins. They act under the guidance of the Brahmins. The Brahmins are like a board of directors for a corporation. They give the general vision. And then the Kshatriyas are like the chief executive officer. They're supposed to execute the vision given by the directors. So they're two different functions. And as you say, if the directors try to function as the executive, or if the executive tries to function as the directors, then things are not as they should be. They're distinct roles. So yes, devotees should be able to play any role. The more transcendental we are to our conditioning, the more flexible we'll be in terms of taking various roles. If the pots need to be washed, we don't say, not my job, you know. We're in there, we wash the pots because the pots need to be washed. You know, if everyone's standing around wondering what to do, and we know what to do, then we should say, okay, this is next. I was, remember, in the visiting Germany with my friend Sonika Rishi from the Oxford Center for Hindu Studies, who has an amazing sense of humor. So we're in Germany for this meeting, and somehow all of the senior devotees were not at Mangalarti. Only the very new devotees were there for Mangalarti. So after the kirtan and the curtains closed, and then everyone's just kind of sitting around. We were guests. We didn't know the routine. And the newbies, they were all saying, they're just kind of looking, waiting for somebody to do something. So Shonika Rishi goes, Sarira Vijajal, the tundra. Says, it's my favorite mantra. So, that's a chatriya if something needs to be done. If we need to evaluate our lives and reconsider and think broadly about the direction of our lives, this is a brahminical type of meditation. See, so whatever it takes. If sometimes we need to make money, and that can be very painful, especially for the brahminically inclined. You know, that it's just not in our nature. But to be able to transcend our nature is a sign of our advancement in Krishna consciousness. Act in any varna that's necessary. So sometimes we need to marshal resources, we need to raise money, we need to figure out how to spend it. One of Prabhupada's senior disciples said that any fool can make money, it takes intelligence to spend it. So it's amazing how much responsibility rests on the kshatriyas. You see what Yudhisthira is saying to Arjuna, has somebody asked you for food? They just expect that the kshatriyas there, they have all the taxes, they have the resource, they should, you know, be providing food. In the 10th canto, there's a story of the brahmana whose sons died, and he bitterly, bitterly complained to the king of Dwarka. You want to remember who that king was? Ugrasena. My sons have died before me. What's going on? What's wrong with you? And Ugrasena was very guilt-ridden and felt responsible, but he couldn't stop it. The sons kept dying one after the next. And then Arjuna, hearing about the situation and wanting to defend Ugrasena, went to the Brahmin and said, I will protect your sons. And the Brahmin was skeptical. What can you do? No, I'm the great Arjuna. I will protect your sons. Just trust me. All right. So he and his wife conceived another son. And when the time for delivery was due, Arjuna came and covered his dwelling with a network of arrows. Could not be penetrated by any enemy. And then the son was born, and the parents were ecstatic, and then all of a sudden he just disappeared. Boop. And then the Brahmin cursed Arjuna. Damn this Arjuna. Why did I trust him, this eunuch Arjuna? Why would I think that he could succeed where Ugrasena has failed? Really, chastise him. And Arjuna had promised if he did not protect this child, he would enter fire. He'd commit suicide. So Arjuna was not there to hear himself getting cursed out. He was already traveling to higher planets looking for this child. So much responsibility he felt. Ultimately, the children were taken by Lord Vishnu because Lord Vishnu wanted to have the darshan of Lord Krishna, who took Arjuna to see him. And then he returned all of the boys at that time. So this is the pastime, but the point is the responsibility for a kshatriya is so heavy. It's said in the 5th canto, Gurur na shishyat, swajano na shishyat, pita na shishyat. One should not become a teacher, a parent, or take any responsible position unless one can deliver one's dependence from birth and death. So this is why it's important for devotees, even though we may be brahminically oriented, to understand the importance of being of leadership. You know, that we will all be pressed to play leadership roles in our lifetime. And part of the responsibility of a leader is to see that everybody is happily engaged. And not to one another, I'm talking about that happily engaged in devotional service. And that takes one of the other qualities of the Kshatriya is to have a very broad mind, you know, an ability to tolerate a lot of abuse, like Karna, when he was holding Parasaram's head in his lap as Parasaram rested, and a bug came along, a vicious bug that began drilling into Karna's thigh. But Karna didn't want to do anything about it because he was afraid that he would disturb his guru as he was resting. So he tolerated the pain. And when Parasaram woke up, the blood from Karna's thigh flowed onto Parasaram's face and woke him up. What is this? He immediately recognized he'd been cheated because Karna had told him he was the son of a Brahmin. Parasaram hated Kshatriyas. But only a Kshatriya could tolerate that pain. He immediately knew that he was a Kshatriya. So in terms of dealing with other people, leadership means tolerating pain and abuse. Because first of all, everyone will second guess what you decide. Everyone will criticize you. The only way to avoid criticism is to not do anything. And then you'll be criticized a little for being lazy. But if you make any decision, then you'll immediately be second-guessed by so many people. And that's painful. And so being able to accept that is part of the Kshatriya, that pain is part of a Kshatriya's duty. See? Has anyone ever read If by Rudyard Kipling, that poem? You know that? So it begins, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you and make allowance for their doubting too. And he goes on. So these are Kshatriya-like qualities. This is what it means, that not everybody's going to love you and you have to make decisions anyway. And you also have to take into account people's different natures and engage them according to their natures so they'll be happy. It's not one size fits all. That's impersonalism. Remember Akendra Prabhu's song, The Mayavadi Blues? He says, I got those Mayavadi blues in my Mayavadi shoes. One size fits all. So just like our kitchen shoes, one size, they don't fit all. Bhakti Mike was in there. I said, well, your shoes. He said, none of them were big enough for my... So everybody has their own distinct way of serving Krishna, and the Kshatriya's duty is to find out and engage them accordingly and not expect everyone's going to be exactly the same. There's certain commonalities that we all observe. Four regulative principles, 16 realms. And beyond that, there's a great variety of ways to serve Krishna. So Prabhupada said that the annual GBC meeting should be, the theme every year should be what? Anyone know? E pluribus unum. E pluribus unum. Unity in diversity. So are the things that unite us in our various distinct ways of serving Krishna. What are those things that unite us and allow for our differences? Any comments? Where is breakfast? That is the question. Okay. Any comments? Questions? Anybody feel like they're a Kshatriya by nature? All right. Ananta, Chaitanya, and Brandon, Vaishnava, Shruti Sagar, okay. Clayton? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
When I was in the kitchen a lot, and I would get really frustrated with devotees who wouldn't come clean pots. Because that, to me, that's what service meant. It's like, you either clean pots or you're in Maya, you know. You're just one or the other. But then I realized that there's just devotees who just, they just don't like being in the kitchen. And that's just who they are. And they're doing something, some other service. But when you have a service, you think that that's what everyone else should be doing too.
Mm.
That was my experience in the kitchen.
You know that phrase from the Shastra that indicates this mentality? Very good. Atmanam. Yeah, manyate jagat. That the way I think is the way the whole world thinks. What's wrong with you people? I'm not sure where it is in the Shastra.
I grew out of it. I just want to say I grew out of that. Okay. Over the years.
Ananta may think the same. They don't wash pots. You don't mind.
But you guys are doing kirtan. That's the thing.
Clayton?
Is it ever the case that one, like, one personality might have like a mixture of in nature than more than just one varna?
Oh yes, yes. Okay. That is.
These mics work really well now.
Yeah. That is inevitable. Just like Chintamani, you studied Ayurveda, right? So
they're the mixture of the doshas.
Everybody's
one that's predominant. Right?
Yeah, there's a dominant one, but there's always a mixture. Nobody is pure, or very few people are pure anything, right?
Especially in Kali Yuga.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that is the